Face-to-Face Upper Intermediate by Chris Redstone and Julie Cunningham. Published by Cambridge University Press. This recording is copyright. CD 2. Recording 5.1.
They're as beautiful as butterflies.
The more I learned about them, the more interested I became.
Koi are getting more and more expensive.
That's almost as much as I paid for my house.
The normal price is nowhere near as high as that.
The bigger they are, the more they cost.
They're slightly bigger than the ones I've got.
Recording 5.2.
Hello?
Hi, Diane. It's me.
Oh, hello, Emma. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
And how are Katie and Paul?
Oh, they're fine. Katie's doing her GCSEs at the moment.
How are they going?
Very well, I think. She's been working really hard, and I think she's going to pass them all.
Oh, that's good.
Anyway, the reason I'm calling is that we're heading down to your part of the world next week on holiday.
Really? You're coming to Cornwall?
Yeah, we're staying in a small hotel in Padstow for a week. Paul got a very cheap deal on the internet.
Great. Well, we'll have to meet up sometime.
Yes, definitely.
Have you got any plans?
Well, we're going to take Katie to the Eden Project. She's thinking of doing environmental studies next year.
Oh, right.
So I thought she'd enjoy it. Paul's not too keen, though. It's not really his thing.
Oh, I'm sure he'll have a great time. It's supposed to be really interesting.
Actually, we were wondering if you'd like to come with us.
Yes, I'd love to. Which day are you going?
We're not sure yet. What do you think?
Well, I've heard it's less busy towards the end of the week.
How about Thursday, then? That's a week today. Or will you be working that day?
No, don't worry. I'll take a day off. That shouldn't be a problem. Actually, there's a programme on TV about the Eden Project on Saturday evening.
Really? When?
Let me have a look. It's on BBC Two and it starts at 7:30.
Thanks. We'll try to watch it.
So, how will you be getting to the Eden Project?
By car. Actually, we'll be driving through your village so we can pick you up on the way.
Sure you don't mind?
Course not. It'll be great to see you.
You too. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has, hasn't it? Just think, this time next week we'll be walking around the Eden Project together.
Let's hope it doesn't rain.
Yes, absolutely. Anyway, what else have you been doing lately?
Recording 5.3.
We'll be driving through your village.
We'll be walking around the Eden Project together.
How will you be getting to the Eden Project?
Will you be working that day?
I'll be seeing them tomorrow.
He won't be coming to the party.
Recording 5.4.
I spoke to Diane. She's coming to the Eden Project with us.
Oh, that's good. Which day are we going?
Thursday. And there's a programme about it on BBC Two on Saturday at 7:30.
We'll be having dinner with your parents then.
Oh, yes, I forgot. OK, I'll record it and we'll watch it when we get home.
Fine. By the way, I'm going to buy a video camera at the weekend. I thought it'd be nice to take one on holiday with us.
Tina has one she never uses. It's brand new, too. Maybe she'll let us borrow it.
Well, it's worth asking. I'll give her a ring.
Don't worry, I'll be seeing her at my yoga class tomorrow. I'll ask her then.
Good idea. Anyway, where's the babysitter? The film starts in half an hour. We're going to miss the beginning.
Oh, I'm sure she'll be here soon.
Recording 5.5.
Although we still don't really know how our sense of smell works, our love of perfume goes back a very long way. The ancient Egyptians used to put perfumed oils in their hair, and the oil found in Tutankhamun's tomb was still fragrant when it was opened 2,000 years after he'd been buried there. And at feasts in Roman times, white birds with their wings soaked in perfume flew around the room so that the air was filled with a sweet scent. In fact, all through history, kings and queens have shown a passion for perfumes. In 1573, Queen Elizabeth I of England was given a pair of perfumed gloves. She wore them all the time and loved them so much that she had a coat and a dress made which had the same scent. In Paris, there's a perfume museum called Osmothèque, which has an amazing 1,100 perfumes. Next to the museum is a school where perfumers are taught how to create new fragrances. It takes 8 years to become a fully qualified perfumer, and there are only about 400 in the world. To make a single perfume, you need between 400 and 500 ingredients, which are often extremely expensive. One of the ingredients in Chanel No. 5, for example, costs $40,000 for half a kilo and smells like burnt candle wax. Incidentally, Chanel No. 5 got its name because it was the fifth perfume offered to Coco Chanel by her perfumer, Ernest Beau. And just in case you think perfumes are only for women, it's worth pointing out that men have always worn perfumes in one form or another. The French Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte loved perfume and apparently used one or two bottles a day. These days, many men wear perfumes designed for both men and women, such as CK1, or even perfumes just for men, like Michael Jordan Cologne, named after the famous American basketball player. How do you decide whether a perfume is right for you? Well, the first rule is never buy a perfume that you haven't tried on your skin. Different skin types react differently to each perfume. What smells wonderful on a friend may well smell terrible on you. And secondly, keep perfume in a dark place at a temperature of no higher than 15 degrees Celsius. Heat and light are the enemies of perfume.
Recording 5.6. 1.
White birds with their wings soaked in perfume flew around the room.
2.
All through history, kings and queens have shown a passion for perfumes.
3.
Queen Elizabeth I of England was given a pair of perfumed gloves.
4.
She wore them all the time.
5.
She had a coat and a dress made which had the same scent.
6.
Perfumers are taught how to create new fragrances.
7.
And there are only about 400 in the world.
8.
Many men wear perfumes designed for both men and women.
9.
How do you decide whether a perfume is right for you?
10.
Never buy a perfume that you haven't tried on your skin.
Recording 5.7.
George, Have you ever worked out your ecological footprint?
No, but it sounds complicated.
Oh, you can do it online in 5 minutes. I did it today.
And?
Well, it was a bit disturbing, actually. It told me that if everyone in the world had a lifestyle like me, we'd need 2.3 planets to survive.
Wow.
Yeah, makes you think, doesn't it? Our lifestyle simply isn't sustainable.
Maybe, but I don't see how we can really change it. I mean, I recycle newspapers, turn off the TV at night, that kind of thing. Are you suggesting we all go and live in caves or something?
No, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I meant was that there are lots of other things we can do, not just recycling or saving energy.
Like what?
Well, take food shopping, for example. Do you ever wonder how far the food you buy has travelled to get to your local supermarket?
That's an interesting point. I've never really thought about that.
Well, a lot of it's flown halfway around the world, which you know causes greenhouse gases. So it'd be much better if everyone bought food that's produced locally.
But if we all stopped eating, say, bananas, then the economies of some Caribbean countries would collapse overnight. How moral or ethical would that be?
Fair enough. But I still think that we should eat more locally produced food and avoid stuff that has too much packaging.
Yes, but then again, the packaging keeps the food fresh. We're not going to... nobody's going to buy food that's gone off, are they?
No, of course not. But I just don't think it's right that the food industry produces so much rubbish.
OK, then how else could I reduce my ecological footprint?
Let me think. Well, you could become a vegetarian.
Really? Why'd you say that?
Well, one argument in favour of being vegetarian is that farming animals is so wasteful and uses so much energy. Did you know that 1 hectare of land can produce enough soybeans to feed 600 people, but only enough beef to feed 20 people?
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and you need 100 times more water to produce a kilo of beef than a kilo of wheat. It's just ridiculous and completely unjustifiable.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think people should have the right to eat whatever they want. I mean, are you saying that human beings shouldn't be allowed to eat meat?
No, that's not what I meant. All I'm saying is that meat production is very damaging to the environment.
Well, some people would argue that it's the customer's fault, not the farmer's.
That's exactly my point. It's up to us to change things. Anyway, we'd better order. What do you fancy?
Well, it's hard to say. I was going to have a burger, but now I think I'll just have a salad.
Good choice.
Recording 5.8.
I think people should leave their cars at home more often.
Maybe, but I don't see how you can ask everyone to give up their cars.
No, that's not what I'm trying to say. What I meant was people should use public transport if they can.
Fair enough, but I still think a lot of people prefer to drive.
All I'm saying is that cars are a big environmental problem.
Yes, but then again, public transport is often more expensive.
I know, but it'd be better if we thought about how much transport costs the planet, not just ourselves.
That's an interesting point. I've never really thought about that.
Recording 6.1.
The section of Kate Fox's book explaining the rules of queuing is fascinating, and the English obey these rules without thinking about it. Jumping a queue will certainly annoy those people queuing properly. However, despite feeling intense anger towards the queue jumper, the English will often say nothing. Staring angrily is more their style. Then there are the rules for saying please and thank you. The English thank bus drivers, taxi drivers, anyone giving them a service. In fact, the English spend a lot of time saying please and thank you, and they hate not being thanked if they think they deserve it. Not saying thank you will often cause a person to sarcastically shout out, "You're welcome."
Recording 6.2.
I don't care how long it takes. I want it right.
Okay, sorry. I'll have it for you by the end of the day.
Look, Bruce is having a go at someone again. By the way, are you going to his leaving party?
I might go for a bit.
Yes, me too. You know, I'll miss him in some ways.
Well, you don't have much contact with him, but I do. And I won't be sad to see him go. He's a... He's extremely difficult to work with. He doesn't listen to anyone.
Yeah, I was in a meeting with him once and nobody could get a word in. And he's so bad-tempered. If he's like that in the Leeds office, he's bound to upset people.
Well, he's unlikely to change his personality overnight. But the Leeds office isn't doing well. And you know, he could improve things there.
Yes, it probably will. Although I can't imagine they'll like him.
I don't suppose he'll worry about being popular. He's just... he's not that kind of person, is he? I remember him saying,
I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to sort out the company's problems.
And to be fair, he has.
Sure. No question about that. Is he, taking his family with him, do you know?
Well, he's likely to be there for at least a year, so I'll be surprised if he doesn't. He's a real family man.
But commuting's a possibility, I suppose. He may not want to give up his house here. Anyway, are you applying for his job?
Maybe. Do you know who else is going for it?
Well, Patrick certainly won't. He knows he doesn't stand a chance of getting it. And I doubt if Lynn will go for it. She's not that ambitious.
But Frieda may well apply. And if she does, they might give it to her.
But you're sure to get the job. You could do it with your eyes closed.
No. They don't think I'm very well organised. And they could be looking for someone from outside.
I shouldn't think they'll employ an outsider just for a year.
Yes, but surely Bruce won't come back to the same job.
You're right. He probably won't. I dare say they'll promote him if he's successful in Leeds. Oh, here he comes.
Don, if you've finished, can I see you in my office?
Right. No, I definitely won't miss him.
Good luck.
Thanks. See you later.
Recording 6.3.
He's bound to upset people.
He's unlikely to change his personality overnight.
I can't imagine they'll like him.
I don't suppose he'll worry about being popular.
He's likely to be there for at least a year.
I doubt if Lynn will go for it.
But Frieda may well apply.
But you're sure to get the job.
I shouldn't think they'll employ an outsider.
I dare say they'll promote him.
Recording 6.4.
Hello and welcome to the programme. With us today in the studio is Joe Allen, who's a professor of mathematics, and Sally Evans, who actually worked for the British Secret Service for over 20 years. They're both here with me to discuss the importance of secret codes throughout history.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Sally, now I understand that a code invented during the reign of Roman Emperor Julius Caesar was used for hundreds of years after his death.
Yes, amazingly it was. It was quite a simple code, really. All the letters of the alphabet simply moved three places. So, A became D, B became E, etc.
How is it possible that the code remained unbroken for all that time?
Well, we often forget that back in those days, not many ordinary people knew how to read. So that's probably one of the main reasons why it lasted so long.
When did people start working out how to break codes?
Well, one of the earliest people to ever break coded messages was an Arab mathematician called Al-Kindi, who lived in the 9th century. He was an extremely intelligent man, and he wrote 290 books on medicine, linguistics, astronomy, and mathematics. He even wrote one or two on music. At the time, he was known as the philosopher of the Arabs, and
In fact, his book on deciphering codes was only rediscovered relatively recently in Istanbul in 1987.
Yes, and actually it was because he knew a lot about maths and languages that he was able to understand how a code could be broken. He did it by working out how frequently each letter was used in a language.
Can you explain that in a little more detail?
Yes, for example, let's take the English language. If you take any general text in English, you'll find that the letter E is the most frequent. And when you've worked out how often each letter appears, then you have a way of breaking the code.
Ah, I see. So you look for the most common letter and you assume that letter represents the letter E.
That's right. And letters in the code that have a very low frequency will probably represent Q and Z because they only occur very rarely in English.
Mmm, that's very interesting. But do all codes use letters of the alphabet?
No, some use symbols, which just means that you look for the most frequent symbol instead of the most frequent letter. In fact, the author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote the Sherlock Holmes books, used stick men as a code in his book The Adventure of the Dancing Men. In that story, Sherlock Holmes manages to break the code when he realizes that the dancing men represent letters of the alphabet.
So, it seems that Conan Doyle knew about Al-Kindi's way of deciphering codes.
Definitely.
And is Al-Kindi's way of breaking codes still being used today?
Recording 6.5.
Well, one of the earliest people to ever break coded messages was an Arab mathematician called Al-Kindi. Yes, for example, let's take the English language.
So you look for the most common letter and you assume that letter represents the letter E.
Recording 6.6. 1.
Come in. Hello, Angus.
Sorry to bother you, but have you got a minute?
Sorry, this isn't a good time. I'm really up against it at the moment. Is it urgent?
No, not really. I just wanted to go over these figures. Don't worry, some other time.
Yes, give me an hour or so.
Okay, see you later. Thanks.
2.
Hello, Lucy Baker speaking.
Hi, it's me. Is this a good time?
Oh, not really. I'm afraid I'm a bit tied up just now. Is it important?
No, don't worry. I just wanted to ask you about house insurance, but I'll catch you later.
Thanks. Oh, and Martin, can you pick something up for dinner?
Sure. See you later. Bye.
Bye.
3.
Come in. Hello, Claire.
Sorry to disturb you, Miss Baker. I was wondering if I could see you for a moment.
I'm rather pushed for time at the moment. Can it wait?
Yes. It's not urgent. It's just about the report you asked me to type up. When would be convenient?
Try me again in a couple of hours.
Right.
4.
Yes.
Hello, Lucy. Are you busy?
I'm afraid I am a bit, Tina.
Just a quick question. When would be a good time to install some new software on your computer?
Tomorrow?
Fine by me. I'll do it first thing tomorrow morning.
Thanks.
5.
Yes.
Lucy, can I have a word?
I'm really rather busy at the moment, Julian, but what's the problem?
I don't suppose I could use your office any time today. It's just that I get so many interruptions out there, I can't get any work done. What have I said? What's so funny?
Recording 6.7. 1. A.
Sorry to bother you, but have you got a minute?
B.
Sorry to bother you, but have you got a minute?
2. A.
Is this a good time?
B.
Is this a good time?
3. A.
Sorry to disturb you.
B.
Sorry to disturb you.
4. A.
I was wondering if I could see you for a moment.
B.
I was wondering if I could see you for a moment.
5. A.
Are you busy?
B.
Are you busy?
6. A.
Can I have a word?
B.
Can I have a word?
Recording 6.8.
Sorry to bother you, but have you got a minute?
Sorry, this isn't a good time. I'm really up against it at the moment.
I'll catch you later then.
Is this a good time?
I'm afraid I'm a bit tied up just now.
I just wanted to ask you about house insurance.
Sorry to disturb you. I was wondering if I could see you for a moment.
I'm rather pushed for time right now.
When would be a good time?
Can I have a word?
I'm really rather busy right now.
Don't worry, it's not important.
Recording 6.9. 1. A.
What did you give Jamie for his birthday?
Well, he's been asking for a pet for ages. We were going to get him a dog, but he said that he really wanted a snake. The feeding would have been a bit of a problem, though, you know, live mice and so on. Anyway, my husband loves cats and they're easy for kids to look after. So, in the end, that's what we got him.
B.
Hi, Joanne. Welcome back. Did you enjoy London?
Yeah, it was great. The English are very nice, but they're a bit different from people here.
In what way?
Well, they talk about the weather all the time, which isn't surprising, I suppose, as it changes every day. And they're always saying please and thank you, which I thought was very polite to begin with, but I got sick of it after a while.
I've heard that nobody talks to strangers on the tube or anything.
Yeah, that's right. But I didn't mind that. It was nice to be left alone, actually.
C.
From where I'm standing, I've got a fabulous view of Green Hills, while just in front of me is one of the largest collections of tulips I've ever seen. And it's all the work of local resident Jean Granger. You must be very pleased, Jean.
Yes, I am, actually. When we moved into the house 3 years ago, all we had was a lawn and a couple of rose bushes. We love flowers, but it's been a lot of hard work.
I can imagine, but it's a magnificent display, better than any I've seen in a public park this year.
Thank you.
D.
Hi, Jenny. It's Philippa. You know we'd arranged to go shopping in town this weekend. Well, I'm not sure that's such a good idea. It'll be difficult to park on a Saturday and the shops will be really crowded. As the weather's going to be so good, maybe it'd be nicer if we went for a walk by the river instead. Anyway, let me know what you think. I'm in a meeting till 3, but give me a call any time after that. Bye!
E.
So, how's the course going, Nick?
Great, actually. I'm really enjoying it. At the beginning, I wondered if we'd spend the whole time writing scripts and looking through a camera, but in fact, we don't. Well, not yet, anyway. We also have lectures on things like the history of the cinema, studying different periods and cultures, that sort of thing. It's really interesting, actually.
That's good.
2.
Hello, everyone, and thank you all for coming. I've spent the last 2 years studying a group of bottlenose dolphins off the east coast of Scotland. These dolphins live in an area of water called the Moray Firth, which is the most northerly part of the world where dolphins are known to live all year round. What's interesting is that if you compare them to bottlenose dolphins that live further south in, say, the Mediterranean, they are clearly bigger and fatter, probably because they need to survive in a much colder climate. Researchers who study the Moray Firth dolphins have also noticed another distinguishing feature, which is that they appear to have more injuries to their skin. Up until now, people thought this was because the dolphins live in difficult conditions in the water. However, some environmentalists now wonder whether the problems may be the effect of pollution in the sea, and they are hoping to investigate this further. Studying dolphins is difficult, as they spend so much time underwater, and so my team have spent a lot of time analysing the different sounds that the dolphins make. The most common sounds are clicks, which dolphins use for location. That is, they make these noises and then listen for echoes to come back from the seabed, boats, the fish they hunt, or indeed other dolphins. So how do dolphins actually listen to these sounds? Well, they use a bone in the lower part of their mouth to receive the signals, which are then sent to the brain. A very clever adaptation. Dolphins also make a range of sounds in order to communicate with each other. Researchers have noticed recently that each dolphin produces its own sound, which is known as a signature whistle. I like to think of it as being similar to a person calling out his or her name. Interestingly, they also copy the signature whistle of other dolphins, although why they do this is not really understood. The dolphin also uses a special call when it finds a group of fish to feed on. Again, the reason for this call is unclear. Some researchers have suggested this sound may be used to confuse the fish, while others think that the first dolphin is calling for help in surrounding the fish before they start feeding. Another interesting thing we have discovered recently is that it seems that...
Recording 7.1.
A new survey out today has revealed that we're spending more time than ever waiting in airport departure lounges. So we sent our reporter Nicole Watson to Heathrow to find out how people are passing the time there.
Thanks, Dan. Excuse me, madam, where are you flying to today?
I'm going to Madrid.
And can I ask how you normally spend your time while you're waiting for your flight?
I usually buy a paperback and just go and sit somewhere quiet.
So, you just read until your flight is called?
Yes, that's right. Once I got so involved in the book I was reading that I missed my plane.
Really?
Yes, it was quite embarrassing, actually.
And what about you, sir? How long have you been here today?
I've been sitting here for nearly 5 hours.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yes, there's a problem with the plane or something.
Oh, and how have you been spending your time?
Well, I really love people watching, and airports are just brilliant for that. So that's all I've been doing, really. Oh, I've also called my parents to say goodbye.
Right. And the gentleman sitting next to you, how do you feel about waiting at airports?
I absolutely detest it, to be honest. Luckily, I only live 10 minutes away, so I usually check in as late as I can.
And how are you spending your time here today?
I'm doing a part-time business management course at the moment, so I'm trying to catch up on my coursework.
And why are you travelling today?
I'm flying to Hamburg for some meetings. I'm supposed to be seeing some clients as soon as I arrive, but I see the flight's been delayed. Just my luck, eh?
And how about you, madam?
Well, I've been looking around all the shops. I have 3 kids and I never get time to shop for myself, so I'm having a great time today.
Have you bought anything?
Yes, a handbag and some perfume. I'm also thinking of buying a camera, but I think they might be cheaper online.
And where are your kids now?
They're with my husband in that restaurant over there having lunch. My youngest is usually very good, but he's being very difficult today. So we've decided to take it in turns to look after them.
Thanks very much. So that's how people are passing the time at Heathrow today, Dan. Back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Nicole. Now, these days, many people seem to...
Recording 7.2.
Ah, here's Ian.
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late.
No problem. Clive and I have only just got here ourselves. So how was your first day back at work?
Well, it was a bit of a nightmare, actually.
Oh, why's that?
Well, I'd only been away from the office for like a week, but there were over 300 emails in my inbox this morning.
Yeah, that always happens to me, too.
Well, I love getting emails. It's about the only thing I use the internet for these days.
Apart from shopping, of course.
Yeah, that's true. I do a bit of shopping online.
A bit? Molly, please.
Well, you see, it's so easy, isn't it? You just kind of, like, click on a few icons and that's that. It doesn't feel like you're spending money at all.
It does when the credit card bill arrives.
Yeah, I generally, I buy a lot of things online too, especially books and CDs and, you know, things like that.
Oh, I don't buy CDs anymore. I just download music straight onto my MP3 player.
Do you have to pay for it?
If it's new stuff, yeah. You, like, have to pay for each song you download, but it's very cheap. Mm. And I go to... There are some other websites where you can, like, download songs by new bands for free.
We should start doing that, Ian.
You see, it's just that I've never sort of found the time to work out how to do it.
That's because you're usually too busy playing that role-play game of yours. Honestly, every time I often come home and find that he's been sitting in the study for hours, you know... fighting some evil monster or something.
That's only when your mother comes to stay.
Very funny.
They're very addictive, though, those role-play games, aren't they?
Yeah, and incredibly popular, too. Any number of people can play. Some of them have, like, about 500,000 people playing at the same time.
Really? Wow.
Excuse me, are you ready to order?
No, sorry, we've been chatting. Can you give us a few more minutes?
Oh, of course.
Well, the thing I love most about the internet is our webcam.
Really? Do you use it much?
Yeah, I do, actually. A lot of my family live in the States, and we kind of use the webcam to keep in touch. You know, for birthdays and that kind of thing.
That sounds fun.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Right, let's order. Is there anything you'd recommend?
Recording 7.3. Conversation 1.
Hello?
Hi, is that Tony?
Yes.
Hi, it's Greg. Greg Robertson?
Greg! Hey, I haven't heard from you for months. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Listen... I'm calling from Sydney on my mobile, so I can't be long. It's probably costing me a fortune.
So, what's going on in...
Anyway, the reason I'm... Sorry, there's a bit of a delay on the line.
Shall I call you back on your landline?
No, don't worry. This is just a quick call to... I'm flying... Tuesday. You'd like to meet... evening.
Sorry, you're breaking up a bit. I didn't catch all of that.
Is that any better?
Yes, I can hear you now.
I said, I'm flying to London next Tuesday.
Really? Wow, that's brilliant news.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you'd, you know, like to meet up in the evening.
Yes, of course, that'd be great. Actually, why don't I come and pick you up from the airport?
Well, it'd be great if you could. Thanks a lot. I get into Heathrow at, 3:20 in the afternoon, your time.
What's your flight number?
Let me see. I'm just about to run out of credit. I'll I'll email you the flight details.
Great. See you on Tuesday then. Bye.
See you later.
Conversation 2.
Hello, Harry.
Hello, Tony. How are things?
Oh, not bad, thanks. I was, I'm just about to go and see those new clients, you know, the software company.
Good. Hope it goes well. Anyway, the reason I'm calling is that we're having a planning meeting next...
Sorry, it's a bad line. You'll have to speak up a bit.
Would you like me to phone you back?
No, it's okay. I can hear you now. What were you saying?
We're having a big planning meeting next, Tuesday afternoon, and I'd like you to be there.
Next Tuesday?
Yes. We'll be discussing plans for this year's sales conference, and we want your ideas. Why? Is there a problem?
No, it's fine. I'll be there.
Good. It's in, let me see, meeting room B, and we'll be starting at 2:30. See you then.
Right.
Oh, and good luck with the new clients.
Thanks.
Conversation 3.
Hello?
Hello, Jenny.
Oh, hi, Tony. How's your day going?
Fine. What about you?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. Busy, as usual.
I can't hear you very well. Where are you?
I'm on the train.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Yeah, the reception isn't very good here. Do you want me to give you a ring later?
No, it's okay. I just wanted to ask you if you're, free on Tuesday afternoon. Greg's flying in from Austin.
Sorry, I didn't get any of that. We just went through a tunnel.
I said Greg's flying in from Australia on Tuesday.
Greg Robertson? Wow, great!
Yeah, the thing is, I have to... I've got to go to a meeting that afternoon. Can you pick Greg up from Heathrow?
Yes, sure, no problem. I'm not working that day.
Great. Maybe that evening we... People around... You want?
Oh, I keep losing you. Say that again.
I said that maybe the evening we could, Sorry, we got cut off.
Yeah, another tunnel, sorry. What were you saying?
I was saying that maybe we could have some people round that evening, you know, for dinner or something.
Fine, good idea. Let's talk about it later. I think my battery's about to run out.
Okay, have a good journey. Speak soon. See you tonight.
Recording 7.4. 1.
Why don't we meet outside the cinema at 7?
Sorry, I didn't get any of that. It's a bad line.
I said let's meet outside the cinema at 7.
I keep losing you. Shall I call you back on your landline?
Yes, if you don't mind. I think my battery's about to run out.
2.
The meeting's at 3:30 in room F.
Sorry, I didn't catch all of that. You're breaking up a bit.
I said the meeting's at 3:30 in room F.
Okay. Oh dear, I'm just about to run out of credit.
Would you like me to phone you back?
That'd be great, thanks.
Recording 7.5.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few. I've had my shams and kicked in my face. Till the end.
taken my bow, my curtain calls. You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all, but it's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise. I consider it a challenge for the whole human.
Recording 8.1.
Hi, Mum.
Oh, hello, Eddie.
Brought the car back. Thanks.
Did you put any petrol in it?
Sorry, I couldn't. I'm a bit short of money. In fact, I'm £50 overdrawn, and the rent's due on Friday. You couldn't, lend me a couple of hundred, could you?
It's about time you found yourself a proper job.
Acting is a proper job.
So you keep telling me.
Oh, please, Mum. I'll pay you back, I promise.
Oh, all right. £200, you say?
Yeah, that'd be great, thanks.
I'll have to see how much I've got in my savings account first. But this is the last time, Eddie.
Yeah, yeah. You always say that, Mum.
No, I'm serious. It's about time you grew up. If you had a job, you wouldn't have to borrow money from me all the time.
I wish I could spare the time, Mum, but, you know, it's all these auditions I have to go to.
Yes. Well, I hope you get something soon. But still, I wish you weren't chasing these impossible dreams.
What impossible dreams?
Oh, you know, dreams about becoming a film star.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm hoping to hear from my agent about an audition I did for a TV advert. She hasn't phoned, has she? I gave her this number.
No, sorry, she hasn't.
Oh, I hope she calls.
What's wrong with your mobile, anyway?
I lost it. That's why I gave her this number.
Oh, I wish you'd take more care of your things. How many is that you've lost?
Only two. And the first one was stolen.
Yes, yeah, so you said. Anyway, what's the ad for?
Norland Bank. I'd be a customer who's asking for a loan.
Well, if you get it, you won't have any problem learning your lines then, will you?
Oh,
but I won't keep going on about it. Anyway, it's time to go. I have to be at work by 6. Oh, I wish I knew where your father was. He needs the car later tonight, so he was going to give me a lift to work. Can you drive me and then bring the car back for Dad?
It's time you got your own car, Mum.
Yeah. Well, when you pay me back all the money you owe me, I'll be able to afford one, won't I?
Recording 8.2. 1.
I wish I had more time. I wish I'd had more time.
2.
I wish he talked more slowly. I wish he'd talk more slowly.
Recording 8.3. 1.
I wish she lived a bit nearer. I wish she lived a bit nearer.
Two.
I wish he'd bought chocolate instead. I wish he'd bought chocolate instead.
3.
I wish she'd visit more often.
4.
I wish he worked for us. I wish he worked for us.
5.
I wish I'd had enough time to finish. I wish I'd had enough time to finish.
6.
I wish I earned a bit more money. I wish I earned a bit more money.
Recording 8.4.
I wish the ad hadn't been so big.
I should have eaten before I went in. I wish I'd learned this stuff about the brain before.
I wish they hadn't chosen me for the coffee tasting group.
I should have started doing this years ago.
I shouldn't have moved so often.
Recording 8.5.
Good meal, Ruth?
Yes, it was excellent, I thought. Another glass of wine?
No, thanks. Just some more water, please.
Do you want coffee?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
Could we have the check, please, Jack?
Certainly, ma'am.
Look, this is on me.
But, Graham, you bought dinner yesterday.
Don't worry, it's on expenses. By the way, do waiters here always introduce themselves?
Well, Cornell University did a study on tipping and found that restaurant staff got much bigger tips if they introduced themselves.
Really?
Here's your check, ma'am.
I'll take it, thanks. Right. How much tip should I leave?
20% is about right. Maybe more if they introduce themselves.
Wow, it's half that in the UK.
Half? No, 15% would be the absolute minimum here.
Right. While we're on the subject, I was in the hotel bar last night, and the guy next to me ordered a drink, got $2 change, which he left on the counter. Did he just forget to pick it up?
No. We tip bartenders here. A couple of dollars a drink, or if you pay at the end of the evening for everything, then 15 or 20% of the total.
We British never tip bar staff. Some people, you know, offer them a drink, but not money.
Wow, that's really strange. You'd never do that here.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks. Tipping New York taxi drivers, there's another thing I'm never sure about.
Same rule as restaurants, 15 to 20%. But they wouldn't... You'd never give less than a couple of dollars, even if it's for a short journey across town. Say it's a $6 fare, you'd give them a $10 bill and say, give me back $2 and we're good.
Taxi drivers in London generally expect to get a tip, too.
So, how much do you give?
Oh, it varies. Some people just tell them to keep the change. Others give 10%.
What about hotels in the UK? Do you tip the bellhops?
We call them porters. Yes, if they carry your bags to your room, we usually give them, like, a pound or two. And here?
Yeah, you tip the bellhop here, too. A dollar a bag and $2 for every journey he makes to your room.
And what if you want room service?
Yes, we'd always give a tip for room service. A couple of dollars.
We'd probably give them a couple of pounds or something.
Yeah, knowing who and how much to tip is always a problem when you're in a different country. I remember when I was in Argentina last year.
Recording 8.6. 1.
Just a glass of water, please. Just a glass of water, please.
2.
Do you want coffee?
Do you want coffee?
3.
You bought dinner yesterday.
You bought dinner yesterday.
4.
20% is about right.
20% is about right.
5.
You'd never give less than a couple of dollars.
You'd never give less than a couple of dollars.
Recording 8.7. 1.
Bigger. Later. Morning. Bigger. Later. Morning.
2.
Waiter. British. Better.
Waiter. British. Better.
3.
Staff. Glass. Half.
Staff. Glass. Half.
4.
Dollar. Coffee. Want.
Dollar. Coffee. Want.
5.
Bought. Fall. Water.
Bought. Fall. Water.
Recording 8.8. 1.
Hello?
Eddie, it's Cynthia. Look, I'm sorry that I didn't get back to you sooner. I didn't realise the time. It's been mad here today.
Oh, hi, Cynthia. Don't worry about it. I haven't been waiting that long. Well?
Bad news about the Norland Bank advert, I'm afraid. You didn't get the part. However, they do want you to do a voiceover for a series of cat food ads. Could be quite good money.
Oh, I wish I'd got the bank advert. But, okay, what are they offering?
Sorry, forgot to ask.
Never mind. I'll take anything at the moment.
They'll have a contract for you to sign at the recording studio. You need to go to the studio.
2.
Hi. How was work?
Quite busy for a Monday evening. Not a great night for tips, though. What are you doing with those flowers?
Oh, I'm really sorry. I'm afraid I broke your vase. I'll get you another one.
It doesn't matter. I never really liked it anyway. So, did you hear from your agent?
Yes, I didn't get the Norland Bank ad.
Oh.
But I did get a voiceover job next week for some cat food ads.
Well, at least that's something. Mm. Look, I'm sorry about this afternoon. I shouldn't have said those things to you.
Like telling me to grow up?
Sorry. I can't believe I said that. I didn't mean to upset you.
Oh, forget about it, Mum. It's okay. And I'm sorry for borrowing money off you all the time. But who knows? These cat food ads might lead on to other work.
Let's hope so, eh?
3.
New improved purr. The cat food no cat can resist. New improved purr. The cat food no cat can resist.
Morning. I'm Eddie Daniels. I'm here to do the voiceover for the cat food ad.
Nice to meet you, Eddie. I'm Paula Evans, the producer. Oh. We're running a bit late, so shall we make a start?
Sure.
Hi, I'm Jess, by the way. I'm working on the ad too.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't introduce you. I thought you knew each other for some reason. I always assume everyone knows everyone in this business.
Oh, that's all right. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Okay, shall we do a run-through?
I haven't seen the script, so could I just have a moment to read through it?
Oh, sorry. I had no idea you'd need a script.
No need to apologise. I only need to go over the lines a couple of times.
Ah, well, they're not lines, exactly. Didn't your agent tell you?
Tell me what?
You're playing the part of the cat.
The cat?
Recording 8.9. 1.
I'm sorry that I called you an idiot. I can't believe I said that.
Forget about it. You're under a lot of pressure.
I didn't mean to upset you.
2.
I'm really sorry about last night. I shouldn't have phoned so late.
No need to apologise. I went straight back to sleep anyway.
I had no idea it was that late. I thought it was much earlier for some reason.
3.
Sorry for losing my temper with you the other day.
Don't worry about it.
I'd only had about 2 hours sleep.
Really, it doesn't matter. I could tell you were absolutely exhausted.